Welcome to another episode of Connecting with the Toms. I'm Julie, your trauma-informed movement coach, coming to you from the beautiful frozen tundra of Canada. It is bloody cold out there. Let me just say.
Well, that's why I live in a different component of the country called Arizona, and it's actually very pleasant in this part of the world, which is why all the snowbirds show up for the next few months.
Right on. But I have to say, like, you did get a little, like, there are some warm states that are getting some crazy weather, so you're not necessarily safe always.
Yeah, Texas.
Yeah, I heard Texas is
last week.
Yeah, I have a
client. Had 15 degrees or something last week. So that's, yeah, it can be cold, definitely.
Well, especially when the city's not used to it, right? So it's a bit shocking to the nervous system when you're not prepared and you're like, I don't, unless I have the clothes for this and I don't know how to drive in this. Oh yeah, talk about dysregulation.
I know.
Crazy, crazy.
Absolutely.
But that we're not here to talk about the weather. We are here.
Not at all.
No, but today we want to talk. Actually, we have a pretty big subject that we want to talk to you today about, and it's all about supporting you after cancer treatments. I have a client just finished chemo treatment, and what I've learned in the Canadian system, and it might be different in the U.S. system, but many people who go through chemotherapy or radiation or whatever typical treatments to eradicate cancer from your body, often once they're done with that doctor, they're like, okay, we'll come back in 6 months for a scan. And that 6 months can be some of the most nerve-wracking time in your life because you're worried that it's going to come back and you have all this worry and guilt and all these emotions that are coming up. And so we want to talk about what are things that you can do to help support your system. I mean, I think, Dad, you want to actually get into, like, what can you do during? Did you want to get into that, or do you just want to focus on the after cancer? No. Okay, during.
Well, I think it's during and after.
Okay, during and after, because again, my dad has worked with cancer patients for a long, long time. And there are some things that I think some people need to be, if you are going through chemo or anything like that right now, what are some things that you can do to support yourself? Because I think there's some myths out there, such as you shouldn't do lymphatics while you're doing chemo. So my dad can share about his client, patient, I'm not client, I have clients, my dad has patients, population. And so, yeah, so we find that because we know that, you know, you can't throw a rock without knowing somebody who doesn't have some type of cancer. This is a really important one. So we hope you listen up. There's going to be lots of nuggets offered here. And we're here to share our experiences and things that we can do to help you manage this journey and whatnot. Because my dad, you have some kind of saying, like, cancer is not a sentence, it's a word. Is that it? Did I say that right?
That's it.
Aha,
that's correct.
I remember. Right. Cancer is not a sentence. It's simply a word. So, you know, there's a journey, and what can we do from this point forward? So, Dad, I'm going to let you take it away in terms of where you want to take this, and then I'll just follow your lead.
For this topic, this is a disclaimer. Anything we say today is not about specifically treating cancer. It's not about treating you individually. What I'm going to talk about is general type information that I think could be potentially beneficial for yourself or loved one or somebody who know, who may be open to looking beyond what advice and what the types of therapies they specifically have been given. But if we look back to, historically, we know that cancer actually isn't a new process. From remains of mummies and, you know, from from studies of, you know, ancient graves and that kind of thing, cancer is something that has been around forever. However, the number of patients who get cancer now is pretty significant. And in fact, the statistics are staggering because presently, 1 in 3 women in their lifetime will have cancer, and 1 in 2 men in their lifetime will have cancer. It doesn't mean the person will die of cancer. It just means they will have some form of the multiple types of dozens and dozens of types of cancers that are presently available. So the approach from a biological medicine perspective is not to treat cancer really any different than any other type of condition that you may go to see a physician. We previously talked about autoimmune disease. We've talked about infectious disease. We've talked about chronic types of illnesses. We've talked about everyday types of signs and symptoms, from migraine headaches to toenail fungus to dysmenorrhea to digestive problems, et cetera. So The focus from a biological medicine perspective is to continue to look at the physiology and biochemistry that's underlying an individual's, you know, component for their biochemistry. So to first of all understand what cancer is. Cancer is basically a morphed or an abnormal cell. It's a natural cell in your body that through some reason, through, you know, something or other, has caused it to go down a row of abnormal division. So cancer isn't the type of thing that, so you had your annual exam, you had a mammography, you had some type of a study done, you saw your doctor, you did some blood tests, and he said everything looks good, come back in a year. And suddenly a year later, or 6 months later, you feel a lump or a bump or have a symptom, it suddenly just appeared. Cancer isn't something that just appears. Cancer is something that's a, we believe, is a 15, 20 year process. And then people say, well, how is it that a child who, you know, is 12 months of age could have cancer? Which basically suggests that we've talked about in these podcasts is something that can be transgenerational. You know, the abnormal cells can be coming from a grandparent or a great grandparent and getting passed down, you know, through lineage. So know that it's a long-term process. The present technology that we have for identifying cancer cells doesn't happen until you can actually see it. But we know that from a physiology, there are so-called subatomic particles that are part of physiology, you know, all the way up through, you know, atomic particles, atoms, electrons, protons, that eventually go into individual cells, that go into tissues, that go into organ systems, that go into the body, that go into physiology, et cetera. So this is a very long-term process, which suggests that there is something that's out of balance long before the diagnosis of cancer is actually made. So, you know, cancer is typically the diagnosis that the barn door has been open for the last 10 years. The horse is like 50 miles down the road, and suddenly somebody says, well, where'd that horse come from? So, we say, oh, you know, how come I got cancer? So we know that good 70% of cancer is related to lifestyle components, which happen over a long period of time. And we've talked about those, you know, almost in every podcast that we've done up to this point in time. So, which is why we promote the whole idea that the basic treatment guidelines are something you don't wait until you have a problem. It's something that you're ideally doing on an everyday basis. So in the present model of medicine, what we know is that, you know, we are trying to basically lasso the horse and see if we can get it back into the barn, but we haven't yet closed the barn door because the barn door is still open. And if there's anybody else in there, they can still get out type thing. So there's four specific types of therapies in the present model of system for the most part. Basically meaning if it's localized, surgery, you see a surgeon and the surgeon will try and remove it. Chemotherapy, as you mentioned, is a typical therapy. Radiation is a typical therapy. And sort of the newest one on the block is what's called biologics, not to be confused with biological medicine, which is a totally different component of this type of thing. So what the oncologist is doing is basically trying to reduce the number of cancer cells to the point where you can't see them. But it doesn't mean, however, that they're gone. It just means you can't identify them, which is why, as you suggested, you will go back in 3 months or 6 months, typically after your cancer treatments have been concluded. And then they do another scan or they take another blood test or, you know, whatever it is they do. And they say, oh, it all looks fine. And then we have this concept that 5 years. So you do that for 5 years. And knowing that the 5 years starts at the moment that you are diagnosed. It doesn't start at the time of when your treatment is done. So if you've been under treatment for 6 or 8 months or 3 years, you are now 3 years into survival. So the 5 years basically starts at literally on the day of diagnosis. And so it's a bit of a misnomer. And so suddenly the belief is that suddenly magically that at the 5 years, one day, you're cancer free. Unfortunately, we know that that's not true. We know that there's still a very high rate of recurrence. So if we look at the 40% of recurrence of cancers, you know, and people are given this false sense of security that, oh, I'm 5 years out, I'm 8 years out, I guess I'm fine. The reality is that we all have cancer cells at some point of the day. We know, you know, there's something like 87 million cells that are made every single day. 87 million. You know, we have 10 to the 13 number of cells. So there's a lot of cells that are turning over. A cancer cell certainly misses that opportunity to die, a process we call apoptosis in the medical terminology. And so then the contents of the cell are recycled, like iron. It doesn't get lost. It's just recycled and goes into a new red blood cell, et cetera. So the oncologist basically is looking at how do I reduce the lesion, what I can see, what's available on a scan or by physical exam or a blood test, which is the challenge. What isn't unfortunately looked at is what we know about the cells themselves. The cells themselves and our body is, for all intents and purposes, just a huge electromagnet. And so we have a lot of electricity, and we know that grounding is one of our key components that we talk about to try and keep recharging your electrical field, per se. So in a younger person, a healthy cell that they've measured has a charge of a minus 70 to minus 90 millivolts. That's a younger person. So when you get old like me, and older people, I'll put it myself in that category, we basically know that cell charge is somewhere about, you know, minus 40, minus 50 millivolts. Just doesn't quite have as much charge, which, you know, we can say is a component of aging. But then when we look at cancer cells, we know that a cancer cell only has a charge of about minus 20 to minus 30. But when these cells are regenerating, we know that you can only regenerate a healthy cell when you have a charge in this minus 40 to minus 50. But if there's no therapy or no treatment that basically is doing something about recharging the cells, when a cancer cell reproduces, then even if you can't see it, and you can't until you get enough, and we're talking literally thousands of cell divisions until it's big enough to see it or feel it or to find a blood test on it, you basically are still producing and continue to produce cancer cells. It's my belief that this is the most common reason that you start to see recurrence, because your therapy really wasn't 100% effective in removing. And in fact, there is no therapy, chemo, radiation, surgery, that guarantees that you can remove 100% of cancer cells, which is why, you know, we are always promoting true prevention, aka the basic treatment guidelines, doing the types of things that we know will ideally can support a healthy lymphatic system, a healthy digestive system, a healthy immune system, healthy nervous system, et cetera, et cetera. So that we have an immune system, thank God we have an immune system, that basically will, as these new cells are forming and are not being removed by an unhealthy immune system, lymphatic system, digestive system, nervous system, et cetera, over a period of time, be it 1 year, 2 year, 5 years, or 10 years, we now have a recurrence. So, of course, we have many, many incredibly positive stories of people having had cancer 20 years ago, 30 years ago, and they're still doing fine. So we know that the body has the capability of, once again, keeping things in balance. So it's a function of, and what I found with when managing cancer patients, often the challenge is that the cancer process, oh my God, it's so difficult. It's so challenging. It almost sucks the life out of your soul, because it's, you know, and something I'll say to a patient, it's like, you know, tying a piece of dental floss around your ankle, going to the top of a cliff and throw you over the top and say, well, we'll hope this dental floss will hold before you hit the ground. And it's that you're basically taken to the edge of, unfortunately, almost dying, where your organs are being incredibly challenged. So as you know, people who have done that, you know, they may have to suspend their treatment because their white blood cells are too low or their red blood cells are too low, and they know if they continue the treatment, unfortunately, the patient may not survive the actual therapy that they're being done. So it's this balancing act between taking you to the edge, but then pulling you back, and then taking you to the edge and pulling you back. And so this is, and the once again, the main goal is simply to reduce the number of cells so you can't see them. But once again, I'm going to say they're still there. So while one is undergoing cancer treatment, you will obviously be following the recommendation of your oncologist or your physician. And please follow. And once again, the disclaimer is you will not follow my advice because I'm not your doctor. You will follow your oncologist's advice because that's the person who's looking after you. But so all I can say is, you know, what I do with my patient population who come to see me for managing cancer is we continue to do the basic treatment guidelines. Because what I know is that when we do those types of therapies and those types of treatments, we have the ability of not, hopefully not totally depleting all vitality, all vital force. We're not sucking the soul and the life out of you know, our cells per se, but we're getting to a point of being able to, you know, have a point of recovery, generally speaking. So there are individual things that I also do with individual patients, but leave it be said that we do recommend grounding. I do recommend a specific diet. I do recommend they drink water. I do recommend they do grounding. I do recommend they get a lymphatic massage or do lymphatic treatments. I do recommend they walk based on their energy, that they get outside, you know, all the BCGs that we typically do in general. So as you said, the main idea is like, well, now what do I do? So I'm finished my treatment from a, you know, from a conventional perspective. My chemo treatments are done. My radiation treatments are done. You know, what should I do now? So what we have to think about, this is a unfortunate staggering statistic, but a number of years ago, UCLA in California did a study looking for the effects of chemotherapy. And unfortunately, what they found was even 10 years after the last chemo, there was still evidence that the chemotherapy medication was still present. So it's like, wow, that chemotherapy drug can still be affecting your health even many, many years after the fact, which suggests that the body doesn't know how to metabolize it efficiently. It doesn't know how to get rid of it. You know, no different than mercury fillings, mercury that's in amalgams that are in your teeth, which is our next topic, by the way, which is about dentistry on our next podcast in general, or exposure to, you know, lead paint that's in the old houses, or lead gasoline for those of you who've been around since the 50s and 60s and driving cars and filled up your car. You know, in general. So we know that we have had a constant exposure to heavy metals. We now know that the sort of heavy metals that people talk about now are plastics in general. And so we're basically being exposed to plastics on an ongoing basis. And, you know, they're now talking about plastics from, you know, the, you know, everything that we think we're doing better, the so-called paper straws. Well, the paper straws have a problem now because of, you know, chemicals that are there, so the straw doesn't disintegrate, you know, and when you're trying to drink whatever it is you're drinking. So, you know, that we live in a chemical laden society. And so it's not to say, oh my God, I can't do anything. The idea is, what can I do? So what can you do is basically now and go into, for lack of a better term, how do I detox? How do I facilitate every organ system? Because even though you may be treated for, you know, breast cancer or colon cancer or prostate cancer or, you know, whatever, brain cancer, doesn't matter what it is, the effects of the treatment that you've had, unfortunately, is still lingering, even though you are no longer receiving the treatment, because suddenly the body just says, oh, I can get rid of this now. Because now we have to really focus on our primary among trees, the ways that our body will most efficiently be able to release anything that's contained in the tissue, no different than if you're treating somebody for mold toxicity, for Lyme disease, for lead toxicity, mercury toxicity. Now we're talking radiation toxicity. Now we're talking chemotherapy toxicity. So the word is not really that important. So what would we do if, you know, you had mold, if you had Lyme, if you had, you know, chemo or radiation? So how do we make the cells in your digestive system absolutely optimal? We know that the cells in your digestive system are turning over every 3 to 5 days. So now what we need to do over the next 3, 5 months, 5 years, 15 years is make sure that those cells that are reproducing themselves are as healthy as possible so that the food that you're eating, the diet that you're eating, basically has the capability of making new healthy cells. And one of the things that is always curious to me in cancer management, that this is what my patients tell me, is that it doesn't matter what you eat when you have cancer, eat what feels good, etc. And they don't make any differentiation between, you know, healthy foods, whole foods, we'll call it whole food diet, versus a more refined, unprocessed or processed carbohydrate type diet. As we know that cancer cells have a take up insulin, which takes up blood sugar, 4 times greater than a healthy cell. And so it's always curious to me when somebody says, oh, it doesn't matter if you drink milkshakes, if it doesn't matter if you eat sugar, because it doesn't matter, it doesn't make a difference in cancer. Yet when they do a PET scan and put a contrast media in, guess what they put in the contrast media? Sugar. Why do they put sugar in there? Because it goes directly to the cancer cells and it lights up. So it seems curious. You can stick it in a scanning contrast, but they say it doesn't matter if you eat it. So obviously, the whole idea of diet that's basically healthy pre-cancer diagnosis, with cancer diagnosis, post-cancer diagnosis becomes the same. So depending, you know, often when somebody is undergoing treatment, they have a lot of nausea, they have a lot of adverse effects, they don't feel well, which is not a surprise because people's hairs fall out, their digestion gets all upset because these cells are reproducing rapidly. And the cells that reproduce the most quickly are the ones that are going to be the most affected. So there's no such thing as doing chemotherapy for breast cancer and it doesn't affect every tissue in your body. Every single tissue is being treated. So radiation is believed to be more localized. However, that's debatable that it doesn't have an effect, because the number one adverse symptom that's associated with people getting radiation is fatigue. And so if, you know, it's irradiating a tumor in the breast, it's like, how come I'm so tired? Which means it's having a systemic effect, even though it's being localized to the specific spot that you're ultimately treating. So we look at the primary among trees. So, you know, we look at how do we improve the cells. Once again, in this whole idea of detox, getting detox from the aspect of how do we remove the remnants of chemo drug that are not metabolized at the time of doing the chemo. Because we see that, you know, 2 weeks after you've done your last chemo, your red blood cells are low or your white blood cells are low. It's like, well, how's that happen? The chemo must still be acting. Of course it's acting. If it's acting on those cells, it's acting on every cell. So that's why during the treatment, we're supporting the body's ability to eliminate as much as feasible the effects of the chemo. Generally, my patient population has found that it's often a surprise to their oncologist that the adverse effects that the oncologist expected were not as dire was expected in general. So, you know, so digestive system, the kidney system, the skin, the deep breathing that's essential. And of course, we talked about it in one of the previous ones. How important is the lymphatic system? I think the analogy we used last time was a fish tank, where we say the fish in the tank is the cell, the water in the tank is the interstitium or the fluid between our cells, and then the filter in the fish tank is your lymphatic system. So just think about that. Now we have an interstitium, we have the fluid that basically, unfortunately, has chemo drugs in it. It has the effects of radiation in it, per se. And so if we say, well, just don't do anything, like you think, how is the lymphatic system supposed to clear that out? How are we supposed to get healthy nutrients to the cell receptors, the fish, in other words, when you have a clouded aquarium that's has a lot of dirty water in it, or our bodies that have a lot of foreign material. That's why, of course, I think the UCLA study found that, you know, some of this then goes into hiding. It goes into places, it goes into the tissue of fat that doesn't have a huge turnover of metabolism, unlike the, you know, the digestive system or your eye or, you know, the other cells that are your skin, bone. You know, you break your arm and 6 weeks later it said, oh, suddenly it's healed. Oh, well, that happened pretty fast, which is great that it does. Otherwise, if we break a bone and it took like the nervous system 2, 3, 4 years or never, you'd have to be wearing a cast on a broken bone forever. So different tissues repair at different periods of time. Fat tissue has a very slow metabolism, and therefore we have a storage of these materials. That so people now were into the Ozempic, you know, semaglutide era of weight loss, and so they lose 100 pounds. And I said, oh, when you lost that 100 pounds, what happened to all the stuff that was in that fat? Got mobilized. And if your among trees are not working efficiently, suddenly, oh, well, I lost the weight, but gee, my stomach was upset, or I had migraine headaches, or I'm not sleeping as good, but I lost the weight. I look better, but I don't feel that great. So you have to consider all the pieces of the puzzle when we're doing those types of things. So if you haven't listened to one of our early podcasts on the basic treatment guidelines, great time to go back and remind yourself of the types of things that are absolutely 100% essential in a post-cancer era. The other thing that will tend to come up post-cancer treatments, as you mentioned, is the watch and wait. The fear that comes in this six months, whatever the oncologist is deciding. And then you go in, you don't sleep for 2 nights before you have your test. You're thinking about it. You can't eat. You have diarrhea. So in other words, you're in a state of heightened anxiety, which means your nervous system is all keyed up. You're in a state of sympathetic dominance, and people are living in this sympathetic dominance state for this 3 months, 6 months, waiting and hoping for the other shoe to drop, hoping, I mean, they cross their fingers as if suddenly it's magically, it's going to be clear, and it'll always be clear. And then they get to the 5-year mark, and they go, oh, finally. And unfortunately, I've had patients who've told me, I was re-diagnosed at 5 years and 3 months. If only I had been 3 more months, suddenly, magically, it would have never come back. Which it's just this big, unfortunate fallacy that somehow, I don't know how patients are given that particular idea that cancer isn't for never. That's why it's not a sentence. It doesn't mean you're going to die. It's a word. It's something that needs to be looked at, addressed. Life goes on. We support everything that we do. We still laugh. We still have fun. We go about our business. We do everything that we can while doing everything that we also can that can be optimizing for our everyday life. I do feel that in this detox period, you know, with detox comes, you know, depending how fast your body is capable of detoxing. Sometimes we have to speed it up. Sometimes we have to slow it down, based on how an individual is feeling. So that becomes individualized to the specific patient for, you know, what types of therapies are we using, what types of things are necessary. But just in general, there isn't any of the basic treatment guidelines, no matter what types of cancer you've had, in my experience, that hasn't proved to be incredibly helpful and effective to start to regain the quality of life, to start to, I'll say, regain and pull that life force back into your body, to know that you can regain the component of healing. The word that I fortunately dislike greatly in the oncology circles is they talk about the war on cancer. This is not a war. We're not at war, because in a war, nobody wins. There's no winner in a war, ever. There never has been, and there never will be. So if you think of it as a war, that's not a very good positive affirmation. Think of it as a journey. Think of it as a process. Think of it as the types of therapies that your oncologist is helping you with will help you get to the point where you will be able to recover. bring back your vital force, bring back, you know, your quality of life that you know, bring back the purpose for which you were put on this planet. There's all the types of things that are essential and important that will allow us to move forward and continue to search for our purpose and continue to be a productive member of our society for our children, our grandchildren, our spouses, our partners, et cetera. Because we're all here, as we have talked about in previous podcasts, about purpose. It doesn't disappear just because you've had a diagnosis of cancer or have had a heart attack or, you know, have, you know, an autoimmune disease. It doesn't matter what the name of the problem is. The reality is it's one and the same about how we attach it. And that I have to take a stop because I need to take a breath.
Well, that leads me into what I was going to offer. So we didn't start the podcast with a breathing exercise because I knew my dad was going to go down this road because everything he said needs to be heard. It really is. I mean, I've heard it a few times. If you've been listening to our podcast, you've probably heard this stuff a few times, but sometimes it's just, we have to hear it a few more times for it to really sink in that you're bang on, Dad. Cancer is not a war. It's really about understanding, you know, befriending your nervous system and befriending your body. And here's an exercise to help you do that. So today we're going to do 4-7-8 breathing. So if you listen to our last podcast, it's my dad's, a couple of my dad's patients are really dialing into this one. A lot of my clients really like this one. So how it's done, if you're not familiar, what we're going to do is we're going to inhale for 4 seconds. We're going to hold for 7 seconds, and then we're going to exhale for 8. So the effect of this one really allows you to get into a parasympathetic response because we're doubling the exhale. Okay. So if you're not able to do it with the pace, I'm going to do it 3 times. So, which is about a minute and a bit. And if you're not able to hold as long, that's okay. Just notice what you want to just notice what you're feeling in your body. So something I do also want to say, what my dad was talking about, you know, that waiting period, that waiting time between when you're done your conventional, you know, treatments of whatever and that next appointment, understanding what your sensation, what your sensory hierarchy is, can be extremely, extremely, extremely helpful. And I've been working on that with some clients, so we'll dive into that a little bit more. But what I want you to notice right now is just take a quick body scan of your body and just notice what sensations are showing up in your body. And if you're not familiar with the sensations, just notice what color are you feeling in this moment? Okay, so just take a quick scan, and then I'll invite you to begin to exhale now. Go ahead and inhale for 1, 2, 3, 4, and hold 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and exhale 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Inhale 1, 2, 3, 4, hold 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, exhale 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Inhale 2, 3, 4, hold 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, exhale 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Well done. So that's 1 minute. Okay, now I want you to just do a quick scan of your body. Notice what 1 minute of 4-7-8 does. Or notice, did a color shift in your body? Are you the same color? If not, great. If so, great. All we're doing is bringing awareness to what's going on in our body. And I think that's a big piece, is that, like my dad was saying too, with the whole war thing, is that oftentimes it's cancer versus you. But the idea is we want to befriend, is the word that keeps coming into my mind. We want to be able to talk to our bodies and understand, like, what can we do to help our bodies feel safer while we're going through the process. So as I was saying, with sensory hierarchy, pressure seems to be a really popular modality that people enjoy because it calms the nervous system, warmth or a hug, like getting a hug. Warmth is another one. So if you like getting, you know, like I use like electric blankets or a weighted blanket. So if you get a weighted electric blanket, ooh, magic, right? So there's all these different things that you can do. So we talked about HRV in our last podcast, or two podcasts ago, I should say. And what you can do is really just use that measure to help tune into what's going on with your body. Use that as a guide. But I find that people, you know, you may not have a coach, you may not have a doctor or a practitioner that can help you figure out your sensory hierarchy, but just start with some basic ones that I know that are really popular are pressure, temperature, and smell is super powerful. But that being said, is that when you're going through cancer, you might be feeling nauseous. So smells may not be the best, but sound is super powerful. So figuring out what healing frequencies that resonate with your nervous system is super powerful. So you can go to the solfeggio frequencies, you can do the brainwave frequencies, you can do binaural beats, you can do isochronic beats. So that's what I talked about in my masterclass. And it's always amazing to hear how powerful it is. Just the power of sound and the power of music can be when you're down and out and when you're nauseous or when you're feeling like the vital life force is out of you. There's something about listening to music that can help shift you, that can offer that hope and offer that light to guide you to finding your purpose again at the end of the day, like my dad was saying. So yeah, so I just want to throw that in there. But actually, one question I had for you, Dad, that comes up in my world a lot with regards to lymphatics is, most people know the lymphatic system is required, you're required to move. And so a lot of people will start jumping on the rebounder, right? So I've known a lot of people like, I bought a rebounder and I'm jumping on my trampoline and all that stuff. And that's great. That being said, I find that if you have, like when you explain the aquarium, if your lymphatic system is blocked or has blockages, just moving your body doesn't necessarily help, because what you're doing is you're just moving the blockages in those areas. So for instance, if your termini just above your collarbone are not open and there's congestion there, it's important that you do understand how to unblock the drains. So in my experience, because I've tried doing the lymphatic stuff, like my dad's like, do a castor oil pack and do, you know, do some movement, do some rebound. And I do. And next thing I know, my legs swell up like a balloon. I'm like, what the frick just happened? Right. And it's often because I have a blockage behind my knee and I have a blockage in my hip. And so, or the big mama, sister Nakylie, Kylie, she's big because like my dad said, digestion is super, super important. So anyway, do you have anything to say to that? That is it important? Like, do you talk about opening the drains, or is it just do the modality, just do like, I don't know, dry skin brushing or the gua sha tool or whatever? Or is it, do you follow a protocol, like opening the big six, as they know from Dr. Perry Nicholson? He talks about it, a lot of people know about it, but I can talk about it if you
want. It's definitely true what you said, that if the drains are blocked, then trying to push more fluid through the drain is gonna unfortunately back up. In my clinical experience of people just starting to do something because they've not done anything about it. So let's say the most effective component to get started would probably be to have a manual lymphatic massage by a skilled therapist who understands the lymphatic system, who understands the area blockages, and will clinically be able to manually, we'll say, manipulate those specific areas, which will get things going. And then when you go home and do dry skin brushing, when you do castor oil pack, when you, you know, go walking or doing something, some resistance exercise in the gym or rebounding. And just a comment about rebounding, when you're rebounding for the lymphatic system, your feet are not supposed to leave the rebounder. You're supposed mm-hmm. to just literally go up on your toes yeah. and come back down, as opposed to bouncing up and down, which is, you know, just as
it's
another
trampoline,
which is basically, we're not right. We're not on a trampoline. We're just basically going up and down to move our lymphatic. Lymphatic is a very gentle type treatment, as opposed to, you know, many other types of therapies that are going on. So yes, once somebody, you know, and if so, you know, we could potentially, and when I first started 30 years ago to do recommend these lymphatic type therapies, that was the what I started with. You start literally at the where the, you know, below the collarbone, because that's your key area. But, you know, people being people said, what? They, it was almost like it was too confusing. It's like, where do I start? How do I do that? I can't do that. It's like, no, I forgot to do that. Oh, so I said, okay, well, then just do it. Just do a Kestrel pack and don't worry about it. Just do dry skin brushing and don't worry about it. And, you know, it works. If they just do it, it works. And if people come back and say, I got a headache, you know, I got XYZ from doing my legs roll up, I said, okay, so then we need to change the focus. And then those specific people, I think it's essential that they basically change the approach. Just like if, you know, we're giving them some therapy and they, you know, have what we consider an adverse reaction, I said, okay, we need to slow that down because your monk trees are not efficient enough to be able to remove it from your body in general. So yes, there's absolutely truth to what you're saying and absolute truth to the reality that that must be what the way many people do it. But I'm, as a physician who've done this forever, I'm more in what are you able to do? And when you do that, what happens? And if you do it and it's a problem, we change it. If you do it and continue to do it and it's working well, good. Then that's what you continue to do. And so I have gravitated to what of the things that I tell a patient, what is it that they're capable of doing, and not only capable of doing, continue to do. Remember, these treatments are not like do them for a month or two and you're good. These are things that we're talking about. Well, a new start, it's like you're going to be doing it forever. You know, you don't one day say, well, I drank half my body weight in ounces for the last 6 months. Okay, now I'm not going to drink water anymore. It's like, no, you continue it forever. You have to continue to move forever. You have to go to sleep every night. So it's not like, oh, I've slept, you know, 1/3 of my life to this point, which is what we do. We sleep 1/3 of our life away in general. Well, hell, I've wasted 1/3 of my life. I'm not going to sleep anymore for the next month. It doesn't work that way. Our physiology is such that we need to keep supporting our natural laws, our basic treatment guidelines, and the therapies that we individualize to the person comes down to their specific needs, their specific requirements, their specific challenges. And so we modify. And so the proverbial, really the important thing in biological medicine is one size doesn't fit all. And whether it's a cancer therapy or whether it's an autoimmune problem or whether it's, you know, palpitations in your heart or breathing problems or in a child that's eczema, the reality is that if 10 kids had eczema, they have 10, there's 10 different treatment plans that must be underlying. And the same goes for cancer, which is always an unfortunate thing, because if you have cancer X, you know, somebody, the oncologist opens a book and says, well, this is what we do. Yeah, but how do you know that works for me? Oh, well, that's just what we do. We don't know if it works for you. And yet there are specific tests that can be done. There's a specific company in Greece, actually, that can tell you and can do a test specifically before you do the treatment, whether it's going to work or not. But the Western society, I'll say US and Canadian society, feel, oh, that test is too expensive and we don't know if it works. And I've had patients who've done the test, shown to their oncologist and said, the chemo drug that you're showing, that you're planning on giving me has been shown to not be effective. Can we use something else? And they said, no, I don't believe that test. We're going to do this. And then the person has an unfortunate adverse reaction and said, well, we'll have to do something else. So it's very unfortunate that, you know, the model is live in the box. We don't get out of the box because one size fits all in that model. But in our model, there's no size that fits all. Everybody has an individual size.
So you get to color outside the lines, basically.
You sure do.
Let's color and explore and whatnot. Fantastic. So yeah, so that's great. So I know you can keep talking about all this stuff, but hopefully you as a listener found it helpful. Welcome to my dad's TED Talk on support after cancer, essentially. We can put this everywhere. And please share this, because I think it's important. Again, I think it's more important for people to hear this, that, you know, you're not alone at the end of the day. If you are listening to this and you do have cancer, if you know somebody, if you're that support person, there are things that you can do to support them. And it's really helping them find space to befriend the cancer that they're experiencing and help them, you know, hold space for them. They're going to feel lots of different emotions at the end of the day. Like my dad said, like, this is the type of treatment or the type of diagnosis that takes you to the brink. And then, you know, I remember with my mom said, this is just another chapter. It was a learning opportunity for her. And, you know, she's grown from it. And, you know, we've all learned things. And, you know, there's lots to be learned here. And there's lots of opportunity for things that you can do to support yourself mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and physically. So yeah. Is there anything else you wanted to add, Dad, before we finish this one off?
As you said, unfortunately, this is the type of podcast that we could go on for, you know, I do a seminar on cancer that takes 2 days. So, you know, a podcast for 45 minutes is literally touching the tip of the iceberg per se. So just know that there is other support out there. You said it well, that you're not alone in this. As you know, you started to say, throw a rock and you're bound to hit somebody who is either experiencing cancer, knows somebody who has cancer, etc. Because 1 in 2 men, 1 in 3 women in their lifetime. So the numbers are ubiquitous. Unfortunately, even the American Cancer Society says, despite the tens of trillions of dollars that have been spent, unfortunately, if you really look at statistics, and I didn't go into statistics, we haven't changed anything. The only thing we've changed in cancer therapy is we diagnose it earlier. But if you consider this is a 15 or 20 year process, so the woman who is diagnosed with breast cancer in 1960, let's say she lived 18 months. Now, 97% of women with breast cancer will have a 5-year survival. However, the only thing that's different is in 2024, they were diagnosed earlier, and so they could live longer. But the woman in 1960 had the process going on for 15 years, but wasn't diagnosed until it's literally at stage 4, where you have metastatic illness. So that's a whole other discussion. And this is not about doom and gloom. This is, as you said, this is not a sentence. This is a word. You have many tools available to you by listening to our podcast, where we share the types of things. But once again, a disclaimer is, this is not about specific individual recommendations. This is about what I do for my clientele. You need to follow your own oncologist, what it is that they're doing, unless you're reaching out for support elsewhere. So that's enough for this one.
All right. There you go. So stay tuned for our next podcast. As my dad has mentioned before, we're going to dive into the world of dentistry and how that affects your connection to your biological health. So it's super, super interesting, especially if you've had heart issues. You got to come listen, because your teeth are connected to your heart and your teeth are actually connected to every part of every organ. So come listen. And thank you so much for being here and supporting us. And we'll talk to you next time.
Talk to you soon.
We want to remind you that knowledge isn't power. Applied knowledge is power, where knowledge turns to experience. We encourage you to implement the information shared, allowing you to shift your health and energy. And if this is your first time listening, we truly appreciate you being here and would love to have your support by subscribing to our channel. We also love hearing from you, so please connect with us and share your thoughts. And if you have any ideas for future podcasts, please let us know. If you're interested in learning more about biological medicine or trauma-informed movement, check out the show notes. Thanks again for listening, and we look forward to connecting with you in the future.